Gee, what a house full of miracles.
Let me tell you, I love to look at miracles.
We'll begin the meeting in the usual manner, with a moment of silent meditation, and after which all of you will repeat the serenity prayer in unison. And I'd like to ask that in this moment of meditation and prayer, we request that you include into your prayers this little 9-year-old granddaughter of mine in the Phoebe Putney Hospital, Leah Michelle Banks. She's in there with some blood disorder caused from these viruses. And we've been very concerned. And any others that you know of will see. Serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. This is an extraordinary meeting of the Cuthbert Group Alcoholics Anonymous. Yes, sir, this is a special meeting tonight. We are honoring our first sweetheart of the Cuthbert Group, June D, on her 25th birthday of being sober without drinking liquor. And I want to say this, I want to welcome each one of you for coming tonight. You see so many faces I haven't seen in good while. It's good to see you. This radiance just fills me to where I want to stay sober another day. And each one of you contributes so much to my sobriety. I am a very grateful alcoholic, and also I'm an antique. And my name is Clayton Coley McKenna. But one thing, I'm sober tonight. And the reason I'm sober is through this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We say through the gate, by the grace of God, or through the grace of God, and all these slogans we have. But I want you to know, this program is that grace. That's a gift. We can't earn it. This grace of God is a free gift. All you have to do is ask in earnest, and you'll get it. It's given to you. No way can I earn it, you earn it, or anyone. So I know this program was inspired by the high power that I choose to call God. It was ordained by God. And you know, it's such a... it can just do wonders. Look at the miracle. How many of us would be dead tonight if it wasn't for God using this program of Alcoholics Anonymous to reach these old minds that have deteriorated and bodies that have gone down? Just how many of us would still be living? And thank goodness we have this program of Alcoholics Anonymous for our well-being, for the families of the alcoholics, and everyone about us concerned. This meeting is just not the same tonight from the others on every March. On this occasion, there's one person that I miss. I mean sincerely miss her. And it's Aunt Martha. Aunt Martha's always sitting there. Radiant smile, beaming, this gal's sobriety. We all love Aunt Martha and understand she had flu or pneumonia, and she's back at home and recuperating at home. And indeed, we miss Aunt Martha, and we want to send her our love and trust that she'll be with us another time. I'm supposed to be your chairman tonight. You know something? Ruth always tells me to wear a coat to the meeting when I'm going to be up. So I want y'all to tell her that I wore this coat to the meeting, but I'm fixing to pull it off now. I'm going to say a little bit about June sobriety. Over 20 years ago, when I walked down that hall, my wife was leading me down there. She got in the door and she turned around to him and says, it's him. She wouldn't keep quiet and had to point me out. And all the women sat over here and all the men over here. And I looked around and I saw this lady sitting there. I said, well, which one is her husband? He said, she hadn't got a husband right now. I said, she's an alcoholic. I said, the hell you say. I said, what is this world coming to? I thought that was the awfulest thing I had ever heard of in my whole life. Well, June was like the rest of us. And getting sober, you know the frustration we go through? It's terrible. We sometimes add to it, create it, but there's frustration there when you're trying to get sober. Now I heard that up at Lumpkin, you've been sober about 2 months. And of course you know at that stage you want to go around and you want everybody to see you, to see that you're not drinking, because they're all looking at you, you know, and watching every move you make and saying, she's still drinking. But they all met down at the drugstore. It was just a hangout, you know. They're drinking coffee and Coca-Cola and milkshakes and Baby Ruth and things like that. So she decided she better go down and join this group every morning. Well, the town had just bought a brand new red shiny fire truck. And she was sitting down at the table and she ordered a milkshake. You know, she needed those sweets. How we feel and having to do without that liquor. And so did Jerky set the glass milkshake down. She reached over to get it, and about that time, the siren on the fire truck started. Great goodness, everybody jumped up to go look at the new fire truck. Well, June, she thought, well, I better go too. So she jumped up and went. They all watched the fire truck, oohed and awed about how pretty it was, and it went on out of here, and then they all began to drift back into the drugstore. June come back in, and she looked down, looked in her glass of milkshake, and there wasn't a drop in it. It was all gone. She looked around and tried to say, figure out, well now, I wonder which one drank my milkshake. But you know, you're frustrated anyhow, and your temper's easy to flare. But she said, I got to stay calm. I got to be cool about this thing. She says, I'll ignore it and I'll order another one. So did Jake said, get me another milkshake. She did. He did. He set it down on the table. And just as she reached out to get it, that siren on the fire truck turned on again, full steam. And everybody jumped up, started out the door to look at the fire truck. Well, you know, June had a lot smart ingenuity, so she got her a piece of paper. She scribbled on that. She said, I spit in this. And she laid it on top of a milkshake glass. She got up and went on, looked at the fire truck, and oh, they oohed and awed about it, spent a little time, and she was just dying to get back in there to get that milkshake. You needed it, you know. You know how you need something sweet, and she was looking forward to getting back in there. She rushed back in there and she sat down, she lifted up that paper. She was full. Oh man, she smiled, she was jubilant about that. Nobody bothered. So she took the straw and got it out of the little paper, you know, and she started to raise up that piece of paper to put the straw in there. And she looked on there and she saw some writing. And it said, so did I. Frustration. Let's see. We got a whole group of people. We just left to get everybody in the world. But seems like we just can't hardly get around like that, so just divided around. I'm going to ask Don to come up and read the preamble for us.
I'm Don Jones. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. If we all take up as much time as Clayton and took up, that'll be the deal. But, on the other hand, I ain't going to let him take up more time than I'm going to take up. Because I know June means more to me than he do to her. So, but every time I think about June, the birthday, I know I done told this before. But down in Fatimore City, it's a roundup down there. They make everybody sign up. Then all the Al-Anon sit down. That leaves just the drunk stuff. Then if everybody done had a birthday, sit down. That gets you to everybody. And then they count them down, one, two, and right on down. And I hung in there pretty good, but I had to go. But I just know old June was going to win the prize. She kept hanging in there. Well, pretty soon, hell, she had to go. She done got up there about 22 or 3 or something like that. So many of them. And one old sucker baby back over there in the corner, I believe that's kind of lying. I don't know. They had 31 years in there or something like that. But maybe he dead by now, because I know if old June going to win that thing, next time she go, I believe. I'm pulling for it. I never pulled for nothing as hard as my life. I said, I know she going to win it. But anyhow, she didn't. But she'll run them a close race. But you know, those heaping folks don't live to be as old as she done been in this thing. And that's the reason. Overlive this thing, overlive this program one day at a time, because you don't ever know when your time going to come. But I don't know. We love everybody in this program, but there's some of you love more than you do others now. Ain't no question about that. And I don't know. June, she's just my favorite anyhow. Yeah, now I got what I'm supposed to do. Y'all in for some kind of treat, I don't know what. But anyhow, I see now we ain't going to wait to hold this meeting no hour, so don't worry about it. We ain't got nothing else to do no how. This is AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and to help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorse nor oppose any cause. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve their sobriety. And I'm going to tell y'all, I do try to work this program, but considering how I work it and how June works it, there ain't no comparison. And she ain't nothing except good AA and go to he better than me. And I try to pattern after her, but I can't make the grade. Thank you, sir. And happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday, June. I'd like to get it. AA certainly makes a change. It makes people fit for different things. It makes good carpenters. It makes a fella fit to be a painter, electrician, plumber, farmer, block maker. It's just good for anything. It leaves them, make them fit to be a deacon on the time. And it'll even make a fella fit to be a preacher. It'll even do that. A good one at that. All right, we got him on how it works. Y'all don't know how it works. I want to come up here and tell him how it works. I'm going to find what that is.
My name is Alan Martin, and I'm an alcoholic. Happy birthday, June. I know this has to be the best place and celebrate your silver anniversary there is to be. I'm just so proud of it. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could not find an easier, we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us had tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We ask his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all of our affairs. Many of us exclaim, "What an order. I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he was sought.
Thank you, Anna. She told us how it worked, and now we've got to find out why it worked. Why, come up and read the 12th edition.
My name is Wyatt Bullock, and I'm an alcoholic. Happy birthday. 12 traditions. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as we may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting others or group of AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Ten, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and theater. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Wyatt. I'm sure glad Courtney and Elliot got to see me again. I haven't seen them in so long, and I'm so glad that they're here tonight. And another gal back there, Martha, she hasn't been here in a long, long time. You're the girl. We're glad to have you. You know, this program now, all we've been talking about here, we got some promises. And those promises are spelled out in our big book, we call it. Those promises were inspired by the God that we know. And I'm going to ask Lil S to come up and read the promises.
My name is Lil Singer, and I'm a very grateful recovering alcoholic. Happy birthday, June. Don, I think she means more to me than she does to you. I thought I could get up here and tell you how much you do mean, all the caring and sharing and just the help you've given me these last few months, but they're not words. I just can't do it. But Alice always tells a story, so I wanted to tell a story tonight that expresses the sentiments I had about alcohol when I crawled to June. There were these two boy cats, these black cats, and they saw this real good-looking girl polecat. And one of them persuaded the polecat to run off with him for a little while. And he came back, and he hadn't been gone long. And so the other boy black cat asked him, you know, why didn't you stay longer? And he says, well, I'll tell you, I didn't get all I wanted, but I got all I could stand. And that's about where I was when I got to June. These are the promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurities will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And one thing AA has done for me, it may not have opened the gates of heaven for me and let me in, but it has opened the gates of hell and let me out. I love you, June.
Thank you so much, Liz. You know, I declare this program, it makes pretty girls prettier. Great goodness alive. You look so radiant here. Let's see. Alice wanted to say something.
Ray, I'm not going to tell a joke. My name is Alice Blackman. I'm a grateful recovering Al-Anon. I think it's grand we can celebrate and have the fun and the joy and all and the pride we have in June. And I want to say a birthday prayer. Watch over thy child June, O Lord, as her days increase. Bless and guide her wherever she may be, keeping her unspotted from the world. Strengthen her when she stands. Comfort her when discouraged or sorrowful. Raise her up if she falls. And in her heart, may thy peace, which passeth understanding, abide all the days of her life. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. I love you, June.
I'm sure that any speaker that goes to a big birthday meeting, he understands everybody's got to say something. But I tell you what, I'm fixing to ask her. A gal, she has just been wonderful in this group. And I'm going to ask her to come up here and introduce our speaker. How about it, Mary Mack?
Thank you, Clayton. I'm Mary McMahon, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
I feel very pleased to be asked tonight to introduce our speaker, because we have a good one, and it's W.H.P. Welcome, W.H.
Jim. What can I say, Shirley? Me and June has had a love affair going on for about 16 years now. That's how long I've been struggling with this program. And it gets better every year, June. God bless you, and I love you, Shirley. Hope you have many more. I'm W.H. Phillips, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's indeed a pleasure for me to be here tonight. Don't y'all worry about the clock, you know. We've used up halftime. Don't worry about it, because I ain't going to quit till I get ready anyway.
Come on.
I was asked to tell one or two of my little dog jokes, so I'm going to try to tell one or two of those. This fellow went out to the bus stop to get on the bus one morning, and he walked up to the bus stop, and there stood a man, and his little dog was standing there, down there on the, laying on the sidewalk. And he asked the fella, said, "Will your dog bite?" And the fella said, "No, my dog won't bite." And he reached down to pat him, and he just like tuck his arm off. Just, "Arr!" And he snatched loose from him, and he said, "Fella," said, "I thought you told me your dog wouldn't bite." He said, "That ain't my dog." Another fella had a great big old bad Doberman. And he had him on a leash one evening out, leading him around, and he decided to get him a haircut, and he went around the side of the barbershop and tied the old Doberman around there and went in there and sitting there and getting a haircut. And the fellow walked in and said, "Who's old big bad Doberman is this out here?" And the fellow said, "He's mine." "Why?" He said, "My dog just killed him." Man, he couldn't believe it. He jumped up, ran around beside the barbershop. Sure enough, there lay his old Doberman. And he said, "Fella," said, "I can't understand a dog killing my Doberman." I said, "What kind of dog have you got?" He said, "A Chihuahua." He said, "Well, tell me how a Chihuahua killed that dog." He said, "Well," I said, "I don't know, but I think he hung in his throat." That's this lady went in a hotel and she tried to check in and didn't have a room, and the fella told her sorry that all the rooms were reserved, the house was full. The fella walked up right behind her and says, "You got a room?" Said, "I'm Mr. Smith." Said, "Well, certainly, Mr. Smith, we got your room." So he signed in, and the lady told him, said, "Listen, I'm desperate." Says, I got to have a place to sleep." Says, "Now where?" Says, "You don't know me." And says, "I don't know you." And I said, "We don't know them, and they don't know us." Said, "I wonder if you let me sleep on the floor in your room." And he said, "Well, since I don't know you, and you don't know me, and we don't know them, and they don't know us," says, "I don't see nothing wrong with it." Said, "Come on." So she was on the floor sleeping, he was in bed. She reached up and shook his bed and said, "Listen," says, "I don't know you." And said, "You don't know me." And said, "We don't know them." And said, "They don't know us." Says, "I wonder if you'd be interested in having a little party." He said, "Well," he said, "since I don't know you, and you don't know me, and we don't know them, and they don't know us, who are we going to invite?" It's a pleasure to be here. I'm an alcoholic. My name's W.H. Phillips, and I'm so proud to be a part of this program. And, you know, I don't know how I got to be an alcoholic, but I think it had something to do with drinking alcohol. I've theorized and tried to come up with the answer so many times, but I think it just primarily has to do with drinking alcohol. I don't know of any other way, Clayton, you can become an alcoholic except drink alcohol. And certainly, I drank too much too long, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm sober tonight by the grace of God and the help that you people have given me, the sharing that you have done with me, and the caring you have done for me. And I just try to return a little bit of it every time I can. June's 25 years old in this program tonight, and I came in 16 years ago, and she was here, and she's been an inspiration to me. And I do love her. And I hope she has many, many, many more, June. And you can look back on the table, and you can find out that you have really got some friends. All that trouble baking that big cake, I don't know who did that. She must love you. But I started drinking early, and I drank the first time I ever drank, I got drunk. Let me bring that out. Best I remember the last time I drank, I got drunk. And I don't know how many times in between then, but I got drunk, and pretty early in life I was having problems with alcohol. And I got put in jail a couple of times. I got put in jail in Albany one time, and I won't go into a whole lot of details about that. Most of you heard about that breakfast they brought me. The thing that I want to point out here is that I swore that that would be the last time I'd ever get put in jail. And you know, I stayed with that. That lasted 28 days, and I was back in the jailhouse again. And I don't know why, except that I drank alcohol. I cannot guarantee my actions when I start drinking alcohol. Now, it went from bad to worse, and we'll get on into it. And there's two things that June wanted me to tell tonight. And one of them is, as my drinking had got progressed way on down the ladder, I was over on Archway Creek one time, and my daddy came over there to get me. Now, this is how low I had gotten. This is how far down the ladder I had gone. And my daddy was going to drive me home. Mama was driving the car, and I wanted him to feel sorry for me. I wanted somebody to feel sorry for me. So I began to cry and wanting pity. And I told him that everything had gotten so bad that I didn't see how I could stand it any longer, and said, I just believe I'm going to take my own life. And he looked at me across the seat of that truck, and he said, you know, said, it'd be a blessing if you could do it. Now, you're not going to put it far down when that happens. And then he wouldn't hush at that, you know. He just said, now, if you just got to do it, so don't do it in your house where your wife and children have to come in and find the blood everywhere and clean up the mess. Say, get out of the swamp if you just got to do it. Do it down in that woods. Of course, I wouldn't have done it for nothing in the world then, out of pure spite. And what else was it, Gene? I forgot. Oh. And then another thing Jim wanted me to tell, I was up at my house one time. I'd been on a drunk 2 or 3 weeks. Nobody knew where I was, and I was laying there, and I was in the worst shape you ever seen. Coffee was flying everywhere. You ought to see me trying to make a cup of instant coffee. I'd stick that thing in that spoon down in that jar, and when I'd come out the top, my hand would just go like that, and y'all need to go. And Mama came up there to see about me. And she saw that her son was in terrible shape, and she said, W.H., why in the world won't you get up and take your stand back? And I could have took every stand back they had in Tennessee, and I think that's the way to make them that. They wouldn't help that situation. But I finally called them, and I said, Mama, whoever comes to the house first, please, please send them to get me some beer. I said, I'm in bad shape. So my daddy was the first one came in. She said, run down there to the dip and get W.H. 6 beers. He said he just got to have them. So Big Papa went off down to the dip. He got in my house, and instead of having 6 beers, he had 4. And I knew he had a problem then. Man, I didn't order 4 beers. I needed 6, and he done drunk 2 of them. But we had it rough around that house. I know Mama, we trained her. She's got to be one of the best Al-Anons. We trained her before she ever knew what Al-Anon was. But we, you know, we're a grateful family. Everybody in the family is sober tonight that I know of. And that's a lot when you got 3 alcoholics, admitted, confessed alcoholics, and they all sober, you know. That's a blessing from heaven. And, I won't get into a big drunk log. All of y'all know that I drank too much liquor, and I showed my fanny, and I got drunk, and I did this, and I got put in jail, and I laid off from home for weeks at a time. And I wouldn't come home because folks tried to tend to my business. And I didn't like for folks to tend to my business. I'd come in from a drunk, and I'd been gone 3 or 4 days, and they'd have a family meeting. And invite everybody except me. Wouldn't let me come at all. So I resented that. Well, what happened, I was sitting in my office in about 1976 or 7, sometime along there. Curtis Chapman walked into my office and sat down and took a seat. Curtis was I just knew of him. He was a salesman, and he was trying to sell me something. And he says, I was about to finish a beer. And I was fixing to get up and get me another beer. And I said, Curtis, do you want a beer? And he said, no, I don't believe I want a beer. I said, I'm an alcoholic. I can't drink one, so it might kill me. And I said to myself, you know, what a pity. That's strange. Man trying to, you know, one beer might kill him. I never could understand that, you know. Why would one beer hurt anybody? And I came in here, and you people kept telling me it's the first drink. So what's that first drink? So it ain't the last one gets you, it's the first one. And I couldn't understand that, because the first one didn't do, you know, it didn't hurt me too much. I'd always tell myself, you know, I wished I hadn't went and got that last pint last night. That was the one that was about to get me. Well, a man explained that to me one night. He said, you know, if a freight train runs over and kills you, it's the caboose that gets you. It's the engine that gets you. It ain't the caboose. So I can understand what they were talking about then. But I drank on 3 years after that. And I remember I came in one time, I woke up and I was in the woods and I didn't know what scope of woods I was in, I just knew I was in the woods. And I got up and I went home. And I walked in the house and I reached for the telephone. And I called this man that 3 years prior to this had told me he was an alcoholic. And I asked him, would he come help me? See, I was on rock bottom, I thought. Of course, I had to drink some more to get further down. Sometimes we think we're at the bottom and we're not quite there yet. And he said, I'd be glad to. And he came up to the house and he drove up in the backyard. And I went out and got in the truck with him and we sat there and he began to share with me what his life had been like, what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous was all about and what it had done for him. And he also told me what it was like now. He went at it a different approach, Creighton, from what I'd ever had anybody else doing. Everybody else would want to tell me, so why don't you straighten up? I had preachers to come to see me, and they said, why don't you just straighten up your act and come on down here and join church and be with us and be like us? Well, you know, I couldn't identify with that because I drank with most of us on Saturday night. And the only difference was I couldn't get up to go to church Sunday morning and they could. But I'd see them in the same place, you know. And I just couldn't identify with that. But Curtis came along and Curtis sat down and he explained to me what Curtis was like and what Curtis had done and what Alcoholics Anonymous had done for Curtis. And for the first time in my life, I could understand something. And I went in the house and I got my wife and I brought her out there. I said, I want you to hear what this man's got to say. He's the only man I ever talked to in my life that knows what he's talking about. I said, he says that I'm sick. You say I'm sorry. I like his theory better. And, you know, we had a good time out there. I went in the house that night, and I handed my wife that bottle I had left, about a half of a pint. And I said, here, you do whatever you want to with this. She went over and poured it out. Oh, in 5 minutes, I knew I'd played the wire. You know, done give my liquor up, it was going down the sink. But I promised Curtis I'd go to a meeting. And I went to a meeting. And it was on a Sunday evening, and there was probably 8 or 10 people in there at that time. This was back in 1969. Wasn't any more than 7 or 8 total, Al-Anon and alcoholic. And I walked in, and they went shaking my hands, and I met the same kind of people I'm sitting here tonight looking at. People who were concerned about W.H. People who didn't want W.H. to be sick. People who didn't want W.H. to be shaken. And they said, come on back here. That's one lady said, come on back here to the kitchen and let's get you a cup of coffee. And I said, no, ma'am. I said, I just ain't never been much of no coffee drinker. The stuff makes me nervous. And I was like, yes, you know. I know she must have thought, well, he must have drunk a gallon before he got on him. I looked like something the dogs had drug up and cats refused to fool with. Finally, one of them shook me on the arm and said, come on, let's go up here in the front room. Said, it was time to have a meeting. Say, you belong up there with us. And I said to myself, now, how do he know where I belong? You know, me sitting there looking like I died 6 months ago, you know. And I went in there, and the old man, they had a meeting here at one give, sitting in a big chair there. And he said, my name's so-and-so. It's about meeting time. My name's so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic. And I said, oh, my God, there's another. That's 2 times I've heard that view. And then he had a piece of paper over there to the one on the left. I said, would you read this? And he said, yeah, I'd be glad to. My name's so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic. And I said, well, I reckon everybody in here tonight got it. You know, I couldn't identify with all that, and I certainly couldn't say I was an alcoholic. Or even though deep down in my heart I knew I was. But, you know how we don't want to admit that. We don't mind people calling us a drunk, you know. We don't mind people carrying us home and toting us up the steps, you know, and all the neighbors looking. We don't mind that. But just don't want to be called an alcoholic. Well, I went to meetings regularly, on a regular basis. I began to come up here and I began to go. I swear I first met June. This was in about March of 69. And I'd go everywhere I could, you know, and I'd been going to meetings about all 3 weeks, I reckon, and I went down into Bainbridge there one night and I says, Hugh was the chairman. I said, Hugh, when you gonna let me read that How It Works thing? And he says, let you read it tonight. If you want to read it tonight. And I said, I sure would like to. He said, all right. So he called on me to read How It Works. And I got up behind the podium. And I said, my name's W.H. Phillips. And I'm... And that's just the best I could do with it. And I read How It Works. And I went and sat down. And it made me feel good. And I felt real good. And, it made me feel so good when that meeting was over. I went up to Hugh and I said, when are you going to let me tell my story? And he says, do you reckon you're ready to tell your story? And I said, yeah, man, I want to be doing something in this program. He said, all right, come down here next weekend, and I'm at next Wednesday night to tell your story. So I had a whole week to practice. I'd gotten in the bathroom. She looked out there one evening, and I drove in the backyard and said, I was sitting out there in my truck clapping. And that thing done got good. And so I went down there that Wednesday night, you know, and I just knew I had all of that wisdom in me, and I just knew that I was going to tell them about it. I was going to share it with them. But going home that night, after I asked if I could speak, I told my sponsor, and he'd been sober about 12 years at this time. He's hard-nosed old alcoholic. I said, I sure don't want you to be down here next Wednesday night. And he said, why? And I said, I'm going to share with y'all. He said, well, I don't know that it'll hurt nothing. No, it ain't gonna help nothing. You ain't got nothing to share. Man, I resented that. I said, what do you mean I don't have anything to share? He said, well, you just don't. You ain't been in the program long enough. And I said to myself right then, I'll show him. So that's why I come out of doing all that practice. And I got down there that Wednesday night, and they introduced me and said a bunch of whole nice things about me. And I got up there behind the podium, and I said, my name's W.H. Phillips, and I'm... And I told them my story. I mean, I laid it on them. I unloaded both barrels. I gave them all 9 yards of it. Everything. And I looked at the clock over there on the wall to see how I was doing with time, and I'd been talking 8 minutes. And had nothing else to say. Had to sit down. Had to take a lesson in humbleness and humility. Going home that night, Curtis said, well, you didn't have much share with it. And I said, no, sure didn't. He said, from now on, and I think about this every time I get behind a podium. He said, from now on, when you go to an AA meeting, they call on you to say something, you tell them your name's W.H. Phillips, and you're an alcoholic, and sit down and shut up, so you done told them everything you know. And he said, until I tell you differently, that's all you tell them. And you know, he never did get to tell me I was ready to get known. To talk, and every time I get behind the podium, I wonder, you know, Curtis, am I ready? I continued to go to meeting, and I continued. I'd get sober, stay sober about 7 months, and I'd have a slip. And I'd been in the program 4 years before I finally had a birthday. They gave a countywide barbecue down in Baker County. Invited the whole level where they come down on buses. They trip on one of the boats out. So proud that I had had a birthday after about 3 years. And then I went, I stayed sober almost 6 years, right at 6 years. And I got to drinking. And I've had a fellow to tell me why I got to drinking. He said there was 2 reasons you went to drinking. One of them was you forgot that you was an alcoholic. You forgot to apply the principles of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous into your daily life. And stay sober. And the other reason you got drunk is because when you quit doing the things that you need to do to stay sober, then the natural thing for an alcoholic to do is want to drink liquor. So I removed what I needed. I removed those things that I needed daily to keep me sober. And then the alcoholic and the stinking thinking and the crazy just, you know, just went berserk. You just, an alcoholic that takes a drink got to go berserk. Anyway, I had a tough time. And I wound up in Willingway, over at Statesboro. And I thank God that I had that opportunity to go there. So they shut me up for 28 days, and they pumped AA into me, and they pumped some stuff into me that I never had thought about. They learned me what it was to try to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we got into them pretty deep, and we started with the first one. I told a man in a smart aleck remark, I said, man, I worked that thing 10 years ago. He said, must not doing a good job of it. And we began to analyze the first step. And you know, it's contrary to anything that a man wants to do. A 200-pound man or a 165-pound man or a 175-pound man or a 115-pound woman to look at a half a pint whiskey bottle and say, I can't handle it. You're too tough for me. That's contrary to human nature. We don't want to do that. And then to admit that your life is unmanageable, whoo, that's one of the worst things in the world. You can throw on an alcoholic who's got a, who is already an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, and that's what we all are. Every alcoholic I know got a, he's an egomaniac and he's coupled up with an inferiority complex. Gotta have an inferiority complex. Can't have nothing else if he's been drunk for 20 years. Can't have an inferiority complex. But anyway, and he says, you know, as Boy told me, he said, you know, we can't just read that step and say, okay, I agree with it. So they gotta have some action in it. He said the best way to do it is get with somebody else and tell them. Admit it out loud that your problem is over alcohol and that your life's unmanageable and I need some help. I remember one time my sponsor told me, when he first came to see me, he said, do you want some help? Do you want to stop drinking? And I said, man, I got to do something. He asked me again, he said, do you want to stop drinking? Do you want help? I said, man, I got to do something. He asked me a third time, he said, now what I want to hear you say is that you want some help. Do you know that was hard to say? I could say easy, oh, I got to do something, you know. But to humble myself down to the point that I said I want some help was hard. And then they began to tell me that in this program said, you're crazy. You're an idiot. And I guarantee you I fit every category in that because, you know, a man that, well, you just, if you walk out the house and step in the hole and break your leg, you know, folks say, old W.H. had an accident. Stepped in the hole outside his door and broke his leg. And if I come out 3 months later or 1 month later after my leg heals and step in that same hole and break it, you know, they go to wondering about you. You know, they say, you know, he may be a little something wrong with him. And if you do it the third time, then somebody needs to tell you to fix the hole, you know. And an alcoholic that'll go out and buy a pound of liquor when he knows what it's going to do to him and drink it is just like that. It's just like playing Russian roulette. But they told me that the second step played a big part in the program of recovery. We came to believe that the power of greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Finally, I came, and finally I came to believe a little bit of something. You know, that there was some help here. And I had to talk that step out with somebody else, you know. Am I really crazy? Can God really help me? And then the third step, you know. I worked on it a while. And then the man told me, he said, now, if you want a third grade education, you just take the first three steps. He said, if anybody goes to school and they get through with the third grade and they quit and don't ever go back to school anymore, they're always known as having a third grade education. And says, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you work the first three steps and quit right there, you got a third grade education. And said, it'll probably keep you sober 60 to 90 days. And he says, what you got to do is go further. said, take pencil and paper. This is the way they made me take the fourth step. I never had took the fourth step. If you'd have asked me during the 6 years that I was sober, I'd have told you, yeah. But I hadn't took it like the big book said, take it. And I took pencil and paper, and I wrote. And I'm sure all of you that's been off and been shut up on one of those 28-day programs, you know what it's all about. You write every chance you get for 28 days. And that thing did me more good than anything that I've ever done in connected with my sobriety. It cleaned the garbage out of me that I didn't know was still in there. Garbage that I had forgotten about. But as I began to write and to, it began to come to me, things that I had done, people that I had mistreated, people that I had hurt, and I could write about them, and then when I got them wrote about, I had taken the fourth step. I had taken a moral inventory of myself. I had put it all down on paper. And then I took the fifth step with the man that was my counselor in there. He said, come on in here and shut the door. It was kind of like that, I don't know you and you don't know me thing. And it says, if I told somebody, they wouldn't know who I was talking about because I don't know nobody you talk about. I said, now read it to me. And I read it out to it. And I got a feeling of relief. We talked about it a little bit. And he said, come on and follow me outside. And we went out to an incinerator. I put it in there and I struck a match and I lit to it and I saw it go up in flames. And he said, that's just like you take your sack of garbage out of your house and set it down out beside the road and a city garbage truck comes along and picks it up and throws it up in the tub. You don't ever see that garbage anymore. It's gone forever. And said, what you just done is gone. You don't have to live with it anymore. And thank God that he led me through that thing. Then I went back to my room and I took the sixth and seventh step down on my knees. And then we get into two very important steps. I don't know why I'm led to talk about steps tonight, but I am. Maybe there's somebody here that God's leading me that way. Made a list of all persons we had harmed. I was riding along in a meeting with another alcoholic and his wife one night, and we were sitting in the front talking about the eighth and ninth step, and where you make a list of all the persons you'd harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all. I've seen people cop out where, well, I'm willing. I can't make it, but I'm willing. But then the ninth step, first part of the ninth step, tears that all up. But anyway, she asked him, said, when you gonna make amends to me? He said, honey, said, I ain't even put you on my list yet. But it says you make a list. And as Courtney said one time, that he owed 150 folks and said he already had a list to start with. I had a list to start with, and I could think up many more. But you know, the people that were hurt the most are the people that were closest to and we loved the most. Oh, I heard a fella say one time, he said, I borrowed $50 from old so-and-so over here. Said, he'd been sober about 2 weeks, and I want to go over there and make amends to him. He said, well, my sponsor told him, said, well, you may not be ready to make amends. He said, oh, yeah, man, yeah. I said, I'm ready to go make amends to him. He said, well, have you got the $50 you owed? He said, oh, no. I said, I want to go over and tell him I'm sorry. He said, hell, he already knows you're sorry. He wants his $50, so there's things you have to do to get ready, you know. You don't borrow $100 from a man and then go say, listen, I'm sorry, I'm an alcoholic. You get ready to make amends to him. You get his $100 or you get his $50 done or whatever it is, and you get to him and then you made amends. He already knows you're sorry. He got money and didn't come pay him. But the ninth step said, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so with either them or others. And that's what it means. Make direct amends to all the folks that you got on your list. Certainly there's things that you wouldn't make amends to, but that step lets you out of that. You wouldn't want to walk up to a man and say, listen, I want to apologize to you. I'm just sorry as I can be, but I've had an affair going on with your old lady for about 20 years. You know, that could get you injured. And you just don't want to do that. There's certain things you don't want to go quite so far with your honesty in this program. And that would be a way you can get out of that. But, you know, the tenth step says continue to take a personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. This is the most important step that I use. I use this step all the time. First, it says continue a personal inventory. Well, if we haven't taken the fourth step, how are we going to continue to do something we never have done? So we got to clean it out to start with before we can continue on a daily basis to take that personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admit it. I got so good with that step that I can say I'm sorry, I'm wrong, and knowing all time I ain't. Now, that's carrying a little bit too far, but it don't hurt to say you're sorry. Just don't hurt to get a little bit humble in life. If somebody can bring you down to size, I know it can happen to you. But the 10th, 11th, and 12th step are our maintenance steps. You know, they're the daily steps. They're the steps that you got to take. They're the steps you use to maintain sobriety with. 10th and 11th has to do with spiritual awakening as a result of what? As a result of these steps. That's how you do it in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Lord don't knock you down normally like he did Paul Saul on the way to Damascus. It's through a gradual growth, or it's through taking the steps through this program. You work them, and naturally you're going to change spiritually. And then the 12th one is where we try to carry the message to other suffering alcoholics. And that's the part we don't never need to forget. Most people that come into the program and they work a little bit on the first step, work a little bit on the second step, work a little bit on the third step, and now I want me a pigeon. They'll go straight to the 12th step. Steps are put in an order, like they're supposed to be worked. First, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. You know, Clayton said something about a preacher a while ago. I'm trying to do a little preaching. God dealt with me very severely, and it's hard to make an AA talk, and then it's hard to get up in the pulpit and try to preach. I preached the other Sunday, and my brother walked up to Mama after I'd gotten that pulpit there. And said, Buddy got his AA a little bit mixed up with his preaching, so he referred to the 12 commandments. So, you know, it's easy to do. I done added two to the commandments. I'm sure there's a two that can be added. But I done talked about the 12 steps so much that I was got it confused. But nevertheless, half of them I probably didn't recognize, didn't realize I did anyway. But I owe this program a lot. It's given me so many working tools. It's given me what I need to work through my daily lives. You know, there's something beyond sobriety. We get sobriety in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Surely we do. But there's something else that we have, and that's beyond. Sobriety and beyond. The beyond is what I use the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for now. Because life ain't easy for me. Life may be easy for you, but it ain't easy for you. It's easy for me to get in a depression. Well, you people have given me a tool to get out of depression with if I get in a depression. Anything that comes up in my daily lives, I can find a working tool in this wonderful program to get me out of it. You people give it to me. You people shared your love. You people shared your concern about me. And that's why I'm so dedicated to try to do what I can in this program. I can't, you know, and then the program goes on after you get through working through the 12. Well, you don't ever get through working those steps. But after you've worked at 9, 10, 11, and you use them in your daily life, don't just work them for one time and lay them up and forget them now. Because I have to go back and grab the first one sometime, and the third one sometime, and the fifth one sometime, and just, you know, continue to work them. I may even sit down and do another fourth step inventory one day for long. I don't know. That stuff comes to me along every once in a while now. But it says, what an order. And you know, that is a pretty big order. What an order. I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. Boy, I thrived on that for so long. Not saints. I went around thinking in my mind, I said, well, old boy, you can do the same old rotten things you've always done. You can still be the old rotten rascal you've always done. Just don't drink no liquor. Said the program tells you, ain't no saint. Ain't got to be no saint. Just be what you want to be. Just don't drink no liquor. I guarantee you that attitude will get you drunk. The program just got through telling us that we grow along spiritual lines. Those spiritual lines are the 12 steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the only lines it's referring to. So we're not saints. The point is, we're growing along spiritual lines. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. And you know, that's a good way to be. That's the thing to hold on to. Progress. You know, if I can make a little progress today that I didn't have yesterday, be a little bit more improved today than I was yesterday, it's a personal program. You people have to help me, but it's a personal program. I have to work it the way it helps me, what it can do for me, the job that I need to do. Courtney rode over here with me tonight, and we had one of the best AA meetings coming along. He got into that, the way he closes his talk so many times about the footprints of God. And that's beautifully put. We could see the sun setting as we would drive, a great, big, beautiful thing. And Courtney said, I want you to look yonder. But ain't that pretty? So that's one of God's footprints. And I said, yeah, it sure is. He said, you know, man couldn't have done nothing like that. I said, well, if he had her, he'd have had it raised coming up in the west and it'd been setting in the east, or the next day he'd have kept it up 3 days in a row to punish somebody he's mad with. Or he wouldn't have brought it up tomorrow at all because he didn't want to shine on somebody he got mad with last night. So God knew what he was doing, you know. He's still on the throne. He still got everything under his command. And he can deal with you, my friends. He can deal with you severely. Or he can bring you down to size. If I haven't said anything else tonight, I want to say this. This program has to be worked in one way. It cannot be worked in any other way. It has to be worked one day at a time. And you know, it's so easy to forget that. It's so easy to wake up in the morning and forget where you're at, or forget who you are, or forget how you work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But it's a one-day thing. You know, if I get up in the morning and I say, Lord, it's going to be a rough day today, and I need your help, and I want you to help me stay sober. But I know I can't do it on my own. And then when nighttime comes, I say, God, I sure do thank you. You got me this far. Thank you. And I can lay down and go to sleep and sleep like a baby. And that's my program. I've just shared with you. And I hope it's helped somebody. God bless you all. June, happy birthday. I love you. Bye-bye.
Rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed his path. AA is bubbling over. You bubbling over with AA, W.A. Now, W.H., the Lord is leading W.H. I know of where I speak. The Lord is leading W.H. And he's doing a wonderful service to God. He's got a message to carry, two messages, and he takes them both proudly and unashamed, and I'm proud of him. And W.H., I want to know, I've been praying for you, and I just love you, and everybody here loves you. Anybody got an announcement? Is there any night or any day of the week, somewhere around, just holler and somebody will tell you about it. And
Okay. Hey, my name is Hubert Kyle, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, everybody. Happy birthday again. The first Monday night in April, I believe it's April Fool, Maurice Cleveland will be having a birthday. I want everybody to get his birthday.
April 1st. Good. Maurice having a birthday. That's wonderful. What about you got an announcement, Howard? Any other announcement? Any newcomers in here tonight? He is right. You've got to work the 12 steps. There's no other way. If there's no other announcements, Ray, come up here and let's give out these chips.
I'm Ray Blackman, I'm an alcoholic. Deborah H., I sure am glad you didn't take your popular advice by killing yourself. You know, I've been listening to you a long time now, and every time I listen to you say something different, say something better, and it's just enjoyable to come over here and hear you make a AA talk. I'm like Clayton. Now you got this thing down, man. I don't think you got it made yet, but you're well on the way.
Yeah, it needs prayer.
I want to say this before I start this chip business too. I think I remember the first night I walked down those steps out there in this program. And I kind of got some ideas, the same ideas that Clayton had about, females in this AA program. I just didn't put too much thug on faith. They were just folks I didn't understand. I understand the drunk man. But I didn't want to have anything to do with any gal drink too damn much liquor. I came pretty regular. I think I started coming over here. I know it was sometime after April of 1971. That's been right at 14 years ago, June. That's a long time. But it's a doggone fool that can't change his mind. You know that? I had two or three ideas about this program. One thing, I didn't like the chip system. I didn't like folks celebrating birthdays. I thought they were putting on a big show and all this stuff. I just didn't care nothing about it. And sweet little old June helped me change my mind about both of them. And I appreciate it. And this group, as in most groups, they have a chip system. It still don't mean anything. Except one thing. If you follow the procedure of these chips, and keep them on yourself all this length of time, and they work for one person. If they can help one person stay sober, it's worthwhile. When you come to an AA meeting and you think you may have a drinking problem, you offered one white chip. As I said, now this don't mean anything in the world except to the person who's taking it. This has two purposes. For the first time, and then if you've taken this before, you tried this program one time, didn't work, and you're able to get back before you go out and die somewhere, and you can crawl back in here and you want to try it again, we'll offer it to you again. They gave me quite a few of them. You carry this thing on your person for a period of 3 months without any alcohol. That's the only one we're going to give you. If you go 3 months, you run a red chip. Get red chip 3 months, no alcohol, you learn blue chip. Blue chip 3 months, no alcohol, you learn amber chip. You carry that 3 months, you've completed 1 year of sobriety with no alcohol in your system. At that time, you, whatever group that you belong to will give you a birthday party, and they will get a bunch of hugging and kissing. Now, you don't care anything about all that stuff, but it's pretty doggone good, I tell you that. Anyway, anybody here for a white chip? For any purpose? First time, second time, tenth time? Anyone under red chip? Blue chip or amateur chip? Anybody else celebrate 1 year sobriety? 2 years? 12 years? 22 years? 23 years? 24 years? Or 25 years? Come on up.
I was going to announce 2 weeks tonight. It's a birthday much more important than mine, so everybody come. His initials are Maurice Preston. I've been sweating with him. I love you, every one of you, and I thank you. That's all I'm saying this evening.
The song here that goes, the title of it is, I Stand Amazed in the Presence. And part of the chorus says, how wonderful, how marvelous. Isn't it? That's what this is tonight. It's amazing. And we won't read that thing. We're going to get on with the rest of it. I'm going to ask that we stand and repeat the Lord's Prayer in unison. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.